Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Ralph. My name is Prince Jackson, even though at the bottom of the screen it says Michael Jackson. That's my real name, but everybody just calls me Prince, so please call me Prince. I met John in 2016, end of 2015, beginning of 2016. We started a student service organization at Loyola Marymount University. We're both rocking the creative Zoom background. I was born in Los Angeles, California. I was fortunate enough to be able to travel the world at a young age with my father. And I'll let, I guess, John introduce himself, and then we can kind of give some more background information after.
Yes, thanks, Prince. Good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, wherever you may be. My name is John Mudo, the president of the Heal Los Angeles Foundation. Just really excited to be on this and share any tips or wisdom or any question you guys may have for us. But kind of like what Prince said, met him back in 2016. Before I met him, you know, obviously a big Michael Jackson fan. Not only just his music, but really grew up with him and Mr. Rogers and my mom and my uncle that taught me really to give back at a young age. But Michael was my big hero. I call it my big Rocky moment when I saw a video of Michael talking about his own foundation called Heal the World, and just was inspired by it as a young age. And till this day, I still can't believe that, you know, I met Prince and we're friends now, and everything that we've gone through, it's just been a great experience. And like I said, just really here to share everything that you guys want to know. So thank you for having us. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Do you mind if we just kind of jump right into some of the student questions that I'm getting sent already?
Yeah,
for sure.
Okay. So the kids want to know, how were you guys able to connect through COVID? Giving back with all the social distancing, with all the rules, especially being in Los Angeles, did it make it more difficult? How did you guys adapt and pivot to that?
That's a very good question. I think like everybody in the beginning of the pandemic, nobody really knew what to do. When we had officially became a nonprofit actually at the end of 2019, and we were gearing up to start putting in-person programs like cooking classes in school. And of course, obviously the pandemic started, I believe in March or April of 2020. And that was right as our cooking class was actually about to start. So John and I took like a month, maybe 2 months to A, see what the environment was like, if this is really going to be, you know, a 2 week thing, which obviously it wasn't. And then we started trying to look at other people and see what other people were doing, which I think John and I both agree at that point, it was beneficial for us to kind of follow the leaders, so to say. But as the pandemic kind of dragged on, it became a hindrance, or it held us back in the sense that we were being a little too cautious or a little too apprehensive. And there was a lot of good work that we could do out there in a safe manner. But because of the scare around the pandemic, it kind of discouraged us from doing that. So that's one of the biggest lessons we learned actually in 2020, was that we just need to be thinking both with our hearts and with our brains, because we want to do good for our communities. We want to help our neighbors and our friends and our families, but we also have to do it smartly. You know, we have to think, I don't know if that's a word, but we have to do it with a high level of thinking to make sure that we're not making a problem worse. And we actually are providing some form of benefit. I don't know, John, if there's something that you want to add there, is like how, cause you're more on the, John's the guy who makes stuff happen. You know what I mean? I may have an idea, but John figures out how to make that idea happen. So he's probably going to have some better input there.
Yeah, just to add to what you said, Prince, I think for everyone here, Prince has a lot of great resources, and Prince always uses his resources for the benefit of the community. So for two examples, during COVID, we had our grab and goes, which is still going on till this day. Prince knew a friend that worked at a company called Fresh and Lean, and they provide, you know, hot meals ready to go, or you have to have the microwave or put them in the oven. But that's something we started in 2020, and it was at our at a church that our board member runs. And then at the time, we had another board member. She was the head chef at Yamashiro Hollywood, which is in LA. And you know, she just wanted to help out any way possible. So that was when we created our Bento Box program. And that was really for all of our healthcare workers during at the time when it was just madness. And we were just delivering very nice bento meals to the healthcare workers, because a lot of them, they got pizza, they got pretty much all the unhealthy food. So like the sushi and fish side was a really nice change for everyone. And everyone in LA knows Yamashiro, so they definitely appreciated that. But just like I said, just really utilizing the resources and the help that you have within your network can take you a long way.
And I'd like to also add to that, specifically with the grab and go program, that almost costs us no money, which is a really cool thing. Like John said, we do look at the resources both that we both have, that I have with my family. And with Fresh and Lean, they make, they're a food making company, and sometimes they don't sell all the food they make, which means that food is just going to waste otherwise. So they recognize that, and they already were doing programs where they would donate the leftover food packages to local nonprofits. So we just kind of hopped on that program that they were already running. And like John said, we had a board member who has a church, and churches are I think religious buildings, I don't want to exclude any denomination, but they're really great like centers to communities, and people who truly like believe and they want to support their communities. Our board member's name is Ray. His church was fantastic. They had volunteers there Monday through Friday at the height of the pandemic outside, just because that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to help their community. And again, it cost us almost nothing to do that. And it's just a really cool, both an entrepreneurial sense that we identified a need, we identified resources, and we were able to bring those resources to those in need. But also it's a cool way on how we can make such a big impact. I believe our number is over 30,000 at this point, meals given out, I would assume. And again, it just came from creative thinking, you know, and it's just such a really cool, I guess, combination of entrepreneurial mindset as well as philanthropic and the idea of giving back.
I was just going to ask about the numbers. Those are impressive, impressive numbers that you guys have done, even in spite of COVID. And it's just absolutely wonderful. We have a question from Ginevra in Italy. And Ginevra, you had an awesome question you should be able to ask.
Hi. It's a really great pleasure to talk to you. And my question is, what are your long-term goals?
That's a very good question. That's a very good question. John and I, we're definitely on the same page when it comes to long-term goals, as far as we would love to have a center, an in-person center where we can be hands-on with our students, with our kids, as far as something similar to like the LeBron James I Promise School or Boys and Girls Club after school program. I think that when it comes to foundations and my personal experience, when foundations get too big, they lack the original purpose for why they were started. We're here to help the community and help people. But when you get big, you get very bureaucratic and you become more like a business, there's different decisions that have to be made because you're thinking about it from an organization and not from a philanthropic standpoint. So long-term, I'd love to see the Heal Los Angeles Foundation spread to, you know, other cities in the United States, but also other cities around the world. But because of my apprehension or my fear of the foundation growing too big and not being able to actually make a positive impact, I really would like to see this grow in a decentralized way, which essentially means that the foundation that services Los Angeles would be run by people who live in Los Angeles. John and I are both residents and we're Los Angelinos through and through. So if we do move towards like a New York, a Chicago, if we went to Mumbai, I'm not a member of that community and I don't know what's going to be best for those members. So what John and I would like to do is to identify people who share that same passion for giving back and empower them to do what we're doing within their own city. And it doesn't have to be the same way. You know, John and I have identified different neighborhoods and areas that are high in have high rates of childhood obesity, childhood diabetes. And those are the areas that we're focusing on to provide physical fitness clinics, as well as nutrition and just healthy education. But that's not the same problem in different cities, you know? So for us, I'd like to think of it as a tailored approach. And we don't want to do it just because it makes us look good. We want to do it because we're focused on impact. So if we can't make the impact we're looking for, there's tons of other foundations out there that we would love to collaborate with that can do it. But if we can do it, then we will do it. And John, I don't know if you also have any other long-term goals you'd like to add in there.
Yeah, I mean, just going back to the part you were talking about, Prince, about the center, just a little background, all of our programming that we're doing now, and we have two so far that we're very proud of. We have our virtual cooking class and another program called Power Up, which is our fitness program. All these programming that we're doing, it's trial and error right now for the long-term plan of the center. So, you know, your typical Boys and Girls Club or after school programs, that, you know, they have maybe music class, dance class, art class, or, you know, college bound. We want to see what kind of programming works and really gets the kids excited about, you know, because it's long days at school just learning your, you know, A through Z part of the school programming. But the after school program is where we really feel like kids can learn outside of school and also have a great time with it. So that's what's been really fun about this, because when we get to that point of the center, and, you know, things are going to change, but at least we can go in saying, hey, we're going to have this, this, and this, and this programming for sure, because it works. The impact from our data and measurement shows that it works. And then that's the program we'll be running. But even, you know, long term, when we do have the center, programming might change as well. So when we get to that point, we'll definitely see and just grow from there.
I'd also like to add to that. Sorry to cut you off, but
no, you're fine.
John and I are actually right now in the process of rebranding. This is our logo as it stands right now, for a bunch of internal reasons. You know, we're in a rebranding process, and part of that is we're restructuring our mission statement. The mission is staying the same, but the wording is different. And I do want to highlight the difference, because what we're adding in is we want to teach kids foundational life skills that are kind of overlooked in a traditional education system, such as balancing a checkbook, financial literacy, stuff that is important once you graduate and you're kind of on your own, but is really a complex or complicated topic. And while building foundational life skills, we also want to encourage our students and our kids to pursue their dreams. And that's something that is not a finite quality. It's something that kind of came up both in my upbringing with my father. He was always encouraging me to pursue whatever it is that I wanted to, and providing me with resources to learn about those dreams so I could pursue them. And likewise with John and his dreams, his family encouraged him to pursue his dreams, you know. And so that's more of a culture or an environment that we would like to build, and we would like to inspire our peers, people younger than us, people then older than us, to pursue your dreams while having a solid foundation for your life.
That's great, great, solid advice. We'll go with a few more questions and then we'll let you guys go. So we have a question from Ricardo, and this we'll start for John and then Prince, you can answer. Ricardo, you are in Italy. You should be able to unmute to ask your question. Okay.
You're gonna say it to me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, hi. I'm very happy to talk to you. And I have a simple question. Are you happy about the progress you have done until now, or you think you can do more?
Do you think there's more to be done, is what he's saying?
Ah, yes, definitely. You know, going into this year, I'm very excited to launch our third program. We're thinking about mental health, just learning from all the learnings and articles about kids and especially teens dealing with severe mental health and lack of SEL, which is social emotional learning. That's one program we're looking to do this year, but being more broad, definitely a lot more work to be done. The word healing is a big word to me. Obviously, it's the name to our foundation, but there's such a strong, powerful name to the word heal that, you know, I think for just a long time, we're going to be doing more work and more work for our community just to better everyone. So a short story, I think, we'll always be doing more. I mean, you know, in a way of saying this, I guess correctly, is, you know, there's going to be a problem every year, whether it's something new. Like, think of COVID, there's a new variant, it's a new problem every month. So I think there's something about the work that we're doing is that we're going to find out new stuff that, you know, kids are lacking, teens are lacking, that we want to support with. And not only kids and teens, but, you know, we're very focused on families too. What can we do to help out? You know, whether it's, hey, is it helping families apply for CalFresh? For people who don't know what CalFresh is, it's a program for families to collect a EBT card to pay for groceries. Just little things like that can make a long difference. But great question. But yeah, definitely a lot of work to be done for sure.
And to kind of carry on that, I would also say the work that we've done. So as a student service organization, which we weren't officially a nonprofit when we were under LMU, we have grown so much from there. And then even from 2019 to now, this is going to be our second or third official full year at the end of this year. It's a personal struggle that I deal with either in philanthropy or in entrepreneurial ventures, that there's the drive. There's always more to be done. You can always do more. But at the same time, if you focus too much on that, I feel like you'll lose the appreciation for how much you've done and how far you've come, you know. And for John and I, I'm very proud of where our foundation is at. You know, we're on our, this, like I said, is going to be our third year, and we're hoping to introduce our third program. And I think when you say it in that way, it might not feel like a lot, because John and I have goals of healing the world, you know, and making every child's life a better place. But having a realistic approach and also patting yourself on the back when you can and when it's deserved. John and I have, you know, we made it through a pandemic in an unprecedented time, at least in our generation. And during that, we were able to provide really awesome COVID relief programs. Our cooking class turned into something so much better than it would have been if COVID didn't happen. And our physical fitness class, I actually feel like, became better because these kids had been locked up for so long. They were just so excited. So it's a balance. And what that balance is hard to say, but recognize the accomplishments that you, or that John and I, we have to recognize those accomplishments that we have done, but also know that our work is not done, and that we should prepare for what's to come, and that we should always be looking to grow, to improve ourselves, but still appreciating the work that we've done so far.
So it's ever revolving is what
exactly
you're saying.
Exactly.
We have a cool question. And if, you know, I know this is kind of like a little off the wall there, but you had mentioned your dad, and Diego had a really good question. I was wondering this myself, and this goes to both John and Prince. Diego wanted to know, what is your favorite song of your father's? This is for both of you guys.
Ooh, that's a tough one. It's a tough one.
You had to pick one.
It's tough. I mean, maybe an album. I could do an album over a song, but there's so much. Like, I have an MJ playlist, okay? And I'll have it playing in my car. And it's one of those things where it's like, every one of those songs is a banger. You know, you're not about to like skip one and be like, I'll listen to that later. So it's very tough in that way to say, like, this is my favorite song. I mean, John, I don't know. Do you have
I like this question a lot. Mine definitely will be Stranger in Moscow. Someone would ask me, like, hey, what's a Michael Jackson song you would recommend? It would definitely be Stranger in Moscow. I think if you could see the live version that he did during the history tour on YouTube, oh man, it's sensational. But that, it probably won't be the most popular Michael Jackson song, but you give it time, you let it marinate for a little bit, it'll creep up on you.
Yeah. I think in that same vein, I think the song is Don't Let Go of My Hand. I know I should know it, but I know, John, you would know it. That's the name of the song, right?
Don't Let Go of My Hand.
Okay. With the flamenco guitar. I'm pretty sure it's the same album. I'm not about to sing it, so let me just
if you guys had to pick an album, we'll go with album. to play it safe, one album.
Oh, mine would be
Happens. I'm sorry, Whatever Happens. That's going to be one of my favorite, just because of the instruments in the background, the way my father's voice moves. I think similar to John's, it's one of those kind of slept on songs, but when it does marinate, it's something else.
All right. So we'll kind of circle on back. John, can you let us know, you guys can both speak on this, about what initially got you guys discussing this when you were in college at Loyola Marymount to create this? Like, how did it spark?
Yeah. For me, you know, like I said, I was always been a big Michael Jackson fan. And I remember researching in high school when I was applying for college, like, is the Heal the World Foundation still exist? And just remember researching that it didn't. And like I said, as a kid, I always wanted to work for his foundation. But then, you know, like I said, did the research, didn't see anything exist. And then as I was transferring to LMU, going into my sophomore year, I saw, like, Twitter and social media, they have algorithms based on what you like. And I remember seeing a tweet from Prince saying, you know, he made a hard decision, but he's going to LMU. And I was like, wow, like, I was like, I gotta one, at least meet him, you know? And I was thinking long term, I was like, maybe I can start something, you know, just maybe. But anyway, as I got into LMU and experienced the culture, and at the time I was working for another nonprofit organization, I always thought, man, it'd be so cool just to start something your own and, you know, just give back. And LMU has been one of the leading schools on giving back on, I think, based on students' hours. But, you know, when I was thinking about working with Prince, I was like, well, let me think about what can I approach him with? Because I just don't want to tell him, hey, I want to start a student org. So I thought about it. And then it's always been in my head of like, well, instead of Heal the World, what about Heal LA, Heal Los Angeles? And then I looked back at the Heal the World Foundation mission, and there was to end world homelessness, hunger, and child abuse. So I literally copied that and pasted it, but I was like, let me dim it down to just LA hunger, LA homelessness, and child abuse. So one of my favorite stories is that I saw Prince and I was like hiding behind the bushes because I was like nervous and also didn't know what to really say to him. But then I popped out. It was at nighttime too. And I was just rambling on. I was like, you know, one, I'm a big MJ fan. He taught me how to give back, you know, and I'm just like nervous and I'm like struggling, everything, what to say. But eventually I got to the point, I'm like, hey man, like, I want to create a student organization with you here at LMU called Heal Los Angeles, and here's what we're doing. Prince was saying, you know, he was very interested, but he goes, dude, you got to have something in writing. So I went back to my dorm, typed out every little detail, and it was done that night. I put in one of those nice, I don't know if it still exists, but you put in those nice essay folders that are see-through, put into my backpack. And I think the next 2 days I saw him and I gave it to him. And I was just like, hey, like, whether or not you go with it, it's just cool to meet you. And then let's just see from there. And then I think when we got back from Christmas break, he texted me and I, you know, I was blown away when he texted me. He was like, hey man, he goes, this is Prince. He goes, really like the thing that you want to start, let's get it started. And then really from there, it took off. We became a student org, really proud of the work that we were doing, because we raised about over $175,000 during our 2.5 years there as a student org. And then I graduated, because I'm 1 year older than Prince. So I graduated 2018 and Prince graduated 2019. So once I graduated, I was working, and then about going into Prince's last semester, he was like, hey, let's make this into a official nonprofit. And then pretty much, like people say, the rest is history. But we definitely changed our mission from homelessness, hunger, and child abuse to more focus on educational stuff.
Yeah, there's, you guys have done a heck of a lot, and you guys haven't been around for very long, which is like really, really cool. We don't want to eat too much of your time, but Prince, can I jump it over to you for a student question? The kids want to know, what was like kind of a defining moment in your life with your upbringing, obviously with your father and who he was, and he did a lot of philanthropic work and a lot of giving back. Was there one thing that you can think of, one moment where you realized the power of kindness?
It's hard to say if it's one moment, just because when I did a lot of traveling growing up, my dad always made it a point to go visit either orphanages or children's hospitals, places where he felt that children were lacking in love, either for a physical ailment that they had or based on society's kind of quote unquote status that they placed them in. So I remember going to a lot of less fortunate kids than myself. And specifically, I don't remember where it was, like what country or what hospital. But I remember being in a hospital, and there was, it wasn't a hospice, but there was a lot of sick kids. It may have been a cancer ward, and they were all laying in bed, and the vibe in there generally is not a happy vibe. And it's hard to make it a happy vibe. But when my dad went in there, he would come not dressed as Santa Claus, but like Santa Claus, where he'd have these big sacks of toys, books, games, whatever it is. And he would spend the day there essentially opening the gifts with these kids, playing with these kids in a way that because of their illness and because of the cancer that they weren't able really to do that. And he felt that just being able to share that kind of childhood experience or childhood wonder would make a positive impact on their life. And from my personal experience, I've seen the just temporarily even the mood change. The kids get a lot of energy. It almost feels like the life comes back to their face. I've heard stories, people have told me that they met my dad when they were really sick and they were much younger, and you'll hear stories of them all of a sudden making a miraculous recovery because of the love, laughter, and just genuine good vibes that he shared with them. And then after my dad died, I grew up, I was still doing charity, but the one that really kind of reconnected me back to my roots is I was working at the Children's Hospital in Los Angeles, which is a really great hospital. They try their best to make it a very happy environment, bright colors, beautiful pictures. And I was working with a program called Literally Healing, which basically we would go and we would deliver books to kids' rooms. And I was in the bone cancer, I don't remember the technical term, but it's essentially the bone cancer ward. And those kids really need to be protected from any and all bacteria. So it's very strict, but it brought me back to that same feeling that I could sit there. I remember one kid taught me how to play dominoes. He was always winning, so I don't think he was like teaching me how to play, but it's such a gratifying feeling to know that you had a positive impact on somebody who really needs it. And so when I think about philanthropy, that's the memory that comes back to me, both the time I spent in the hospital with my dad and the time after. And it really makes it worthwhile.
Well, it's wonderful to see his influence still resonating years, decades down the line, and I know it will continue. So before we go, we'll start with one final question, and it's this, and we'll start with John. John, can you tell the kids, as they kind of go off in the world and figure out what they want to do, can you talk to them about how they can make a difference in their community, wherever they're at in the world? And then we'll hand that question over to Prince in the end.
Man, that's a good question. Not sure if this will answer the question, but I remember when I was just graduated high school, and I definitely knew I wanted to work in nonprofit and give back to my community and even further than my community. And I remember speaking to one of the executive directors at the Boys and Girls Club. I was asking him all types of questions. And that's one of my tips too, is ask all the questions. Don't feel like there's any dumb questions. Even in school or work sometimes, like if a question seems like, oh, I should know this, just ask it. There's no harm in that. But anyway, going back to the story, I was asking him all these questions, And he goes, John, he goes, I love it. You're smart and blah, blah, blah. He goes, and you want to give back, which is so great. He goes, but make sure you take care of yourself first before you can take care of others. Didn't fully understand what he was saying at the time. But now that, you know, you went into college, you're out of college, it makes so much sense now of like your health and your own well-being. But once you have that, you know, figured out, it makes the process so much easier. Like, you know, you can help out others. Like, I'm always thinking, even like, I'm big on like the whole finance thing. And I was telling Prince this the other day, but just helping out my friends, you know, that's helping out others too. It doesn't always have to be, you know, thinking about like giving out money or, you know, giving to the homeless or anything like that. But that's something that resonates with me till this day of like, you know, making sure you take care of yourself before you can take care of others. And then once you have that figured out, like I said, it becomes easier to take care of others.
That's a really good point. To kind of piggyback on that, if you've flown before, you've heard the saying, you know, you got to put your own mask on before putting it on somebody else's. And that's in the same vein that John's talking about from personal experience. If you are not in a good mood, if you're not in the right mindset, helping others, the quality of work and the quality of help that you're going to give to others will not be the same if you're not well taken care of. So you do need to take care of yourself first in order to be able to take care of others. And as far as like John said, I'm younger than him, but we're both the same age. I recently graduated. I can't tell you that I know what I want to do with my life, but I do know what type of person I want to be. And if you look at throughout history, there's been everyday people who rose to the occasion and then they became noteworthy in history, such as Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Michael Jackson, leaders of different countries. And they are human beings, but it's how they reacted to the world around them. And when it comes back to, you know, giving back, however it is, for me, I feel time is very valuable. It is one of the most valuable assets out there because you cannot make it back. And nobody really put, there are dollar amounts put on it, but I don't think it's actual value. It's just whatever we say. And for me, when I was younger, like in high school, I noticed that a lot of my friends really just needed somebody to talk to. And sometimes I wouldn't even talk. I would just sit there and talk to them. And when people talk about me, that's who I am, because that's the person I knew I wanted to be. I wanted to be a beacon of support for my friends and family and people close to me. If you're passionate about taking care of animals, by all means, that's, you know, nobody should tell you, oh, I think you should take care of children. You know, that's, I love animals, but I also love children. And if I can figure out how to help animals as well, I will. But my focus seems best placed on helping children. And it's just, you do, it's hard to figure out what you want to do in life, but I don't think it's hard to figure out who you want to be, because what you do and who you are aren't the same thing. And there's only so much that you can actually have control of in this world. And in reality, the only thing that you do have control of is yourself, the way you respond, the way you react, and the way you act in various situations. So when I'm put with a, like, let's just say a complicated situation, I don't know how to handle. I know a lot of people say, what would Jesus do? And that's a very solid role model. So you can try to put yourself in his shoes. But I also like to think, in 5-10 years from now, am I going to be proud of the decision I made? And it's a solid kind of thought process for me. It's helped me work through some things. It shows you really what's important and how would you like to be remembered, either at the end of your life or in 5-10 years from now.